Hello, I'm T.S. Wright, founder and president of the God Center Concept and host of the Kingdom Crossroads podcast. Our mission is clear. We are here to help spark a great harvest, a revival, if you will, across the United States. That's why we are launching the 2540 campaign. Over the next 40 days, we're going to ask people to join us, just like you, and to give a one-time tax-deductible gift of $25 and partnering us with this mission, and then sharing this vision with other people so we can expand our reach in powerful ways. God is calling us to work, and together we can see lives transformed and hearts awaken. You can simply scan this QR code or go to www.godcenteredconcept.com to make this one-time gift to our ministry. Thank you for being a part of this community. Your prayers and your support mean more than you will ever know. May God bless you in all that He calls you to do. And as we always say here, now go forth in total surrender to the one who owns and reigns over all creation, and let the great harvest begin. Welcome to the show that combines biblical truth with the purpose of sparking revival. Committed to spreading the gospel, this is your Kingdom Crossroads podcast, and now your host, T.S. Wright. Welcome, everyone, to the Kingdom Crossroads. I'm your host, T.S. Wright, and I'm so glad you could join us today. Before we dive into today's episode, if you haven't already, just take a moment, make sure you follow or subscribe, and give us a like. And we thank you for being a part of the Kingdom Crossroads community. And also, you may check us out on our website at www.godcenteredconcept.com, which is the main sponsor of the Kingdom Crossroads. Well, here we are, and we are going to have a special guest on today. Joining us is Joshua Spatha. He has majored in anthropology with a minor in Old Testament studies. And before he began serving in full-time missions, yes, that's right, we've got a guy that has served in full-time missions and is doing mission work. In 2006, traveling primarily in the Middle East and Asia, he is an ordained minister, a student of history. Joshua has led collegiate level discipleship and missions, and is currently preparing to move long-term to Central Asia. He is married to a lady from Singapore and is the proud father of three multicultural boys. His book, Mere Spirituality, A Rare Embrace of the Supernatural in the Crisis of Our Age, is getting ready to come out. As a matter of fact, it's coming out August 5th. I'm going to post the show on August 4th. So that way you guys, so this is August 4th, and that is when you guys are going to hopefully jump on this and you can buy the book the next day. So Joshua, with all that said, welcome to the show.
All right, thanks for having me.
You bet. It's great to have you here. So Joshua, just to start us off here, I've given a quick bio, but I'm not going to be able to do it justice like you. So why don't you tell us about your journey and just give our audience here an understanding of kind of what the path has been for you.
Yeah, very scientific, kind of analytical mind as a kid, and wanted to kind of go into engineering while I was in high school, but I was talked out of that by a family friend. Ended up going to university to really, because I wanted to kind of put that analytical mind to something a little bit bigger, a little greater. Studied origin theories, anthropology and historical geology and cosmology, kind of to keep my sanity during those years. I also picked up a minor in Old Testament studies from the only religion professor on campus, who was a Jewish professor, was planning on going to Dallas Theological Seminary after that, and was accepted, had a scholarship, had taken entrance exams, and then like a month or so before classes started, administration office called me and said that the funding for their scholarship had fallen through. So kind of last minute change of plans, I wasn't able to go. And at that time, another friend of the family sat me down and told me, Joshua, I've been praying for years that you wouldn't go to seminary. out of that conversation, he kind of pointed me in the direction of missions, specifically YWAM or Youth with a Mission. And it was kind of one of those moments where I felt the finger of God on me and felt that that was what I was supposed to do. Very shortly after, God enabled me to actually do it. And so did a different DTS, not Dallas Theological Seminary, but Discipleship Training School with YWAM out in Denver, and then did my field phase down in the Amazon, came back, raised support, went on staff, and have been with the organization ever since. So coming up on 20 years now.
Oh, wow. So, man, I love listening to that journey. That's a fascinating journey, to be honest with you. And now what I want to do is kind of dive into some of your thinking, okay, and look at your worldview in the spectrum of this book, Mere Spirituality, the one that you're promoting and obviously getting ready to release on August 5th. Can you explain kind of what a warm worldview is or a cool worldview is? And why does that matter that we need to have that understanding and all those pieces, and you know, how do we define that? I'm just going to let you take that away.
Yeah, well, the idea kind of stemmed from, and the book kind of opens with this passage when Jesus is talking to a woman, saying that we have to worship God in both spirit and truth, and so kind of putting those on a spectrum, if you will, and temperature, I felt kind of illustrated that spectrum well, with spirit being on the warm end of that worldview spectrum and truth being on the cool end, and how that correlates to us in how we think and process and interact with the world around us, truth being the more rational, scientific kind of thinking of the typically associated with the left brain, and spirit being more like the experiential, emotional, artistic, right-brained individual. In Christianity, we also use colloquialisms and phrases like head and heart, versus is it just information or knowledge that you have, which is good, that's necessary for a biblical worldview. But it has to be combined with a spiritual understanding, an emotional involvement, and a full integration, if you will, of head and heart, so that we can worship God properly. He designed both, obviously. One is not necessarily right or wrong or better than the other, but if you know anything about psychology or personality tests, however much weight you want to give those, but you definitely understand that people are wired different, and they're going to have a natural bias kind of to one of those poles or the other.
Yes.
As well as then on top of the personal kind of hardwiring or personality type, then you're also going to have cultural influences. And different cultures being obviously just an amalgamation of different people and their own personalities forms a kind of a cultural narrative, which then kind of reinforces and usually prioritizes one end of that spectrum or the other. So in a Western culture, we very much are rational, scientifically minded, at least we claim to be. That's the view we like to have of ourselves. And we definitely, come from, kind of a heritage of Greek philosophy and Greek thinking. Which ironically also very much incorporated spirituality. But we have leaned very heavily into the rational, materialistic side of that. And therefore, spirituality in our modern culture is at times looked down upon or just kind of disintegrated from our everyday lives. Yep. And so I really wanted to reintegrate those things and show the merit of both sides of that spectrum so that we stop, you know, lobbing hand grenades at one another and realize the sanctity of both sides, and also to encourage us, whichever side of that spectrum we may find ourselves on. I don't think we can necessarily change to some degree, but you know, I'm not here advocating if you're on a personality spectrum, if you're a very, you know, hyper rationalistic or, you know, data driven individual, like I don't think you're going to be able to shift over to become this, you know, hyper emotionally driven, you know, individual. But what we can do is grow our perspective to where we're a more holistic and balanced individual. And so that was one of the elements of kind of understanding that spectrum, to understand ourselves, where we might lie, and therefore where some of our weaknesses, our biases, and prejudices almost against those who are on the other side, and learn to overcome that.
So, interestingly enough for you listeners, I teach at a high school as well as doing all this ministry stuff. I teach sociology, psychology, and civics. So the things he's describing, you need to really listen to these things because they play a huge role. If you're sitting in our discipleship series, our second lesson in the very first book is hitting exactly what Josh was talking about culture and how our culture is derived from a traditional culture of it's basically Hellenistic point of view from the Greek side. And what's happened is over time, Rome was most likely founded by an exiled Greek, and they carried that philosophy, and that just became more sophisticated in the Roman Empire and all the way through this history in Europe. It's basically just grown in sophistication, both as technology has become more sophisticated, but also sociologically. And what's happened is that sophistication has just manifested into what we have now as what we call Western society. And Joshua is hitting this point. I'm telling you guys, you need to read this book because the things he's talking about, he is spot on. He is absolutely spot on. It fits right into our discipleship series that we're doing and the things he's talking about. And I really hope that you guys will take the time to go and purchase his book on this. And so, Joshua, I have another question for you. And, you know, as you and I are exploring this subject, talk a little bit about the, just from our Western cultural point of view, worldview, I should say, talk about maybe some of the practical things that we need to do to really implement biblical principles in a way that Jesus meant for them to be done. Not the way that Western society interprets, but the way that they should be, and how we kind of cross that cultural divide. Because I teach some of this in the discipleship. I want to hear you explain it because I think our listeners need to hear this.
Yeah, I mean, there, you know, the book, you know, starts off in an apologetic, you know, kind of getting people over the hurdle that they might have of even accepting a spiritual reality, and shows actually the logic and the rationale behind it, but then shifts gears to, you know, once that is established, then, okay, then how do we actually engage with that spiritual reality? Because obviously there's a lot of different viewpoints on that out there, a lot of different religions and cultural traditions which man has developed in order to try to reconnect with the spiritual realm, and so I kind of then go into what we would often just call spiritual disciplines and how we can reengage in that connection and relationship with God, but I'll pick on one of those, you know, just to give an example of how there's kind of a very different understanding in the Eastern Jewish, you know, mentality versus how it's kind of been translated or interpreted over the years with our more Greek-thinking minds and heritage. And that would be the subject and discipline of fasting. So of all the spiritual disciplines, fasting is probably the one that I've encountered with students that they understand the least or that they practice the least. So I've found just kind of unpacking it and helping them understand what it is and why we actually practice it is very beneficial. Oftentimes, and this isn't true of just, you know, college-age students, this is true of adults, churchgoers, etc. Oftentimes our understanding of fasting is kind of like a way that we can impress God, a way that we can kind of twist his arm to get him to do the thing that we're praying for him to do. You know, we kind of view it as a hunger strike. it's like, God, I'm not moving until you do this. But that is the exact opposite of what fasting is supposed to accomplish. It is not a tactic in which we get God to align with our will. It is a spiritual discipline that helps us to align with his. The background understanding of what fasting is from a Jewish perspective, again, vastly different from how your average Christian understands it today in the Western world, because we have associated the spirit being, in different ways than Greeks have, in different ways than Jews or Hebrews did. And so this is a classic head and heart, you know, misalignment.
Oh, yeah.
In that, and even beyond that, because if you were to ask the average person today, like, where does your soul reside? Or where does your spirit reside? In English, a lot of times those two words are interchangeable, even though obviously in Scripture they are not. But if you were to just say that, where does your soul and spirit reside? Most Americans or Westerners today would kind of scratch their head and not really know how to answer that. If you were to kind of break it down and ask more specifically, like, where do you think the mind resides? Most Westerners would point to their head.
Yep.
But if you go back to Greek philosophy and Greek culture, where they would point is to their heart. And so we get some of that language translated into our English Bibles, because even though we think the mind resides in the head, there is this symbolic, at the very least, or linguistic connection that we have to the heart because of our Greek heritage. But the Greeks literally believed that the seat of all intellectual and emotional activity occurred in your chest. And so when, you know, you're in Sunday school and you talk about, I ask Jesus into my heart, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about your soul, your spirit, man. Even though we might not necessarily actually believe today that the geographic region, if you will, of that is actually in your chest. But then to compound this even further, the Hebrew understanding was even more different than the Greek, where we would point to our head and the Greeks would point to the heart, the Hebrew would point to their gut. That was the location of the soul and spirit. And this is where the entire concept of, you know, clean and unclean foods came from. Of course, ultimately derived from, you know, Genesis and the fall. How did sin enter the world? By Adam and Eve eating something. Even curiously, if you look at the consequences or the punishments that God specifically laid out for each individual involved in that, he cursed Adam to have to toil, to work the fields in order to feed his belly. He cursed the woman to endure pain in her belly during childbirth, and he cursed the serpent to crawl on his belly. Yeah. So there's this very strong correlation between soul, spirit, and belly. And this is all throughout the Old Testament, although in English translations it is translated or interpreted often to refer to, you know, soul, spirit, inner man, heart sometimes, rather than what the actual Hebrew says, which is leib and leibab, which is literally center or innermost being, but specifically the gut. Jesus translates this in real time into Greek at one point, and he is very clear about this in that he quotes an Old Testament passage about the inner man and rivers of life springing forth from that inner man. And the Greek word that he uses there for inner man or heart, as we often translate it, is not cardia, which is the Greek word for heart, but he translates it as koilia, which is the Greek word for abdomen. So this understanding of fasting comes from that Hebrew or Jewish understanding of where your soul and spirit reside. So it's not a tactic, a hunger strike to get God to do what you want him to do. It's literally saying, God, I need less of my soul, less of me, to give room for more of you.
Amen.
In that place, so that I have the will to choose to do what your will is rather than what mine is. And so it's an activity or a discipline that strengthens our will, actually, to align with the Spirit of God, not to try to get him to do what we want him to do or what we want us to do.
So I'm gonna jump in with fasting here, because just so you guys know, I have done a couple of 40-day fasts, and it's not, and he is spot on. It is not about twisting God's arm to get what you want. What it is, it's about getting your will in alignment with his. And then what he'll do, and what's always happened to me when I've done a long-term fast, is God has taken that and transitioned me into some kind of a movement according to his will. And in one of those cases, he actually changed the trajectory of my life to get rid of things that I did not need that were getting in the way of what he wanted me to do. That is what fasting is about. It is about getting you in alignment with him, not the other way around. We don't change God's will. God changes ours to align with him. Fasting is a very powerful way of doing this. So I think that you guys need to understand that as you when you do a fast, that it is about him aligning you to him. And I think that's so important. I